Good morning. Happy Monday to everyone. Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. Some amazing guests. We have been having a wonderful conversation backstage, and I know we are going to entertain and educate you. But I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I hope everyone is doing wonderful today, that everyone had a very happy Father's Day. And then we're going to start this week and get to work and start your week and your Monday off with some information that I'm sure you're going to love. I'm going to start with our first guest, Mr. Daryl Hulse II. You may recognize his face. You may recognize his name, but if you don't recognize either of those, I'm sure you're going to recognize his laugh. This man has the best laugh, and he's been on the show at least four times. So I know you're familiar with him. And one of the things that I have enjoyed is I have enjoyed watching his journey from March to June. And we're going to find out the updates on Daryl. Good morning, Daryl. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, see,
Doing
you're.
excelente, as they say in Spanish.
So you're calm today. I know somewhere in the next hour we'll get you to laugh, and the people will love your laugh as well.
Sorry, it's easy to make me laugh.
I love it. You are so funny. But I saw your pictures and you were out. One of the things that I thought was interesting with you is you do so much. You work with people on meditation, you work with spirituality, and then you work with Andrea on retreats. You do so many different things. But when we first started on this aspect of the journey, you were teaching meditation, you were doing Zooms, and then you moved into your own podcast and also your own business page. Tell us a little bit about what you have going on now, Daryl.
I've been integrating because I have this SoCal business podcast that I started, and I wanted to create more experience for myself to have more of a understanding of what to ask people. So I've been focusing more energy into my business since everything started. Everything's kind of opened back up for door to door and everything. I started a I'm a sub dealer for ADT right now, so I've been doing a little bit of that, but I still do meditation every single day. I still am offering kind of like spiritual consultations, and pretty soon I'm gonna have another. I might do like a flurry of the SoCal Business Podcast episodes just to catch up on everything I wanted to accomplish.
Well, I'm sure you'll find some interesting guests today. But even when you do ADT, the thing that's interesting to me about you is that you're the kind of person that doesn't just do anything lightly. And you damn sure don't do anything like anyone else. Like, I see all these pictures of you out doing your ADT work, and you're making 3D photos, and you're utilizing every aspect of your personality when some people would say, okay, I'm working for ADT. This is what I'm doing. But you make it special.
Oh yeah. Once I figured out that 3D photos was a thing, I started getting excited and using it all the time. It's mostly like to stand out. If I see something that helps me stand out or see something that's interesting to me, then I think that it'll be interesting to other people and they'll obsessively look at it like me, hopefully. If not, then I'm just obsessively looking at a photo by myself, which is fine.
No, I enjoy your photos. I enjoy your work. I enjoy what you do. And I enjoy how you make everything. You have such personality. So it's not just a picture of a guy standing in a uniform. It's like this experience of what a person does during the day who works for ADT. You understand? It's like a difference in just a job and watching it as if you would watch a show.
Think about making it into a show.
You should. I would support that.
Door-to-door adventures.
I would definitely support that. We definitely have some more comments and questions for you, but we're going to introduce our next guest so we can find out more about what's going on in their world. I want to introduce Ms. Lisa K. Stevenson. She is the owner and CEO of Combination Couture Company. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Sharifa. I am wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Thank you for joining me. So, tell us a little bit about Combination Couture.
Sure. Combination Couture is a company that I started, I want to say maybe about 2012. And when I first started the company, I thought that I wanted to really be into fashion and things like that. So that's what I primarily started doing. And then slowly but surely, I transitioned into writing because afterwards I joined the military. And then I left the military. And while I was there, I started writing. And, you know, out of the military came a book, and then from that book came 8 other books. And then it was just, next thing I know, you know, I had all these books published, and then I decided that I still wanted to stay in the publishing realm. So I recently launched She's Single magazine. And the magazine is doing tremendously well right now. So I'm grateful for that. And so Combination Couture at the moment is just the, I guess, the parent company to She's Single magazine, Lisa K. Stevenson Books. And of course, I do publish my books through Wilson Book Group, which is also a publishing company that I own.
Okay, so in about a minute, you gave us so much. You did it in 1 minute what a lot of people have, in 60 seconds, what a lot of people have been trying to do for 60 years. You know, and you do it so calmly. You're like, yeah, and then I was doing this, and then I wrote 8 books, and I'm like, wait a minute,
yeah.
8 books? A lot of people can't get that energy or you know, to actually finish one book, but you did 8 books. So what's the genre? What's the theme of your books?
So I've written and published 8 books to date, and they're all different genres. So I write thrillers, I've written romance, I've written psychological thrillers. I've also written mystery. So I've pretty much written every genre. I go to festivals sometimes, and like all my books are on the tables, and you know, people are, they're just like, well, have you been writing since you were in the womb? Like, how do you have like all these books? And I'm just like, well, you know, my life is very inspirational. I have wonderful people in my life. They're funny, they're entertaining. And, you know, I kind of just pull inspiration from everywhere, you know, and even with the magazine, I got the idea for the magazine because I was like watching the Hugh Hefner documentary. And then I was just like, well, I want to do something like this. And I think that, you know, our community needs it. So I'm just one of those creatives where like I can't just sit and just enjoy something. I have to like, you know, think of a way to, I guess, make it my own in a sense.
Okay, so I was about to say this is an interesting question, but then I thought that's kind of vain, like you're asking the question. But my question is, do you have a writing process? Because after 8 books, people tend to know, like, in order for me to write, I have to do this, or I have to be here. I mean, you know, do you have to be in a certain space? Do you have to be in a certain mindset? Do you have to have your particular typewriter? Do you have any process that you have developed over 8 books that really works for you?
Absolutely. And just as a writer, I commend myself with how far I've come. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my writing has definitely developed. And one of the things that I've noticed is that I really need to be in a position where, you know, I have a collection of books that I want to read. So as I'm writing, you know, I'm also reading. And it's usually a time for me to, let's say I have 5 books that are on my to-be-read list. Then I'll say, well, I'm going to read these 5 books, and I'm also going to be working on a book. And then that's a part of my process. And also, I love writing on a Saturday morning in complete darkness in my home at my computer. So that's pretty much like those are some of the things that I typically need in order for me to really like develop and, you know, write a good book. And another thing that I don't do is I don't write just to write. You know, I think that my readers, they've come to appreciate the quality of my work, and I'm all about quality because I'm a perfectionist. So, you know, when I feel inspired to really write, that's when I write. I don't really do deadlines. Mm-hmm. I do what I feel like it. And that's why my work is so great.
That's beautiful though. That's beautiful to live in that world, or to live in a world where you can do what you love when you love doing it. And so, I'm the same way. I kind of do what spirit says do. That's why hate adding anything to my calendars, a lot of schedules. I'm like, because maybe I might not feel like doing that. I may not
Yeah,
feel like talking
exactly.
to that person. I may not feel like going there. So I kind of set up my life so that it's based on what, aside from the roundtable talk show, which I have to be at 8 a.m. every morning, I kind of do, what I feel during the course of the day. So let me ask you this, because I did a show the other day with a gentleman who does tours, like travel tours. He takes people on tours all over Europe, and he took people on tours all over Dubai in the Middle East. So I asked the question of him. I said, okay, well, do you know any Saudi princes? Because I'm trying to get married. I'm trying to be a part of the royal family, and I want to be wife number 32. And they were like, why 32? I'm like, because the first wives, they do too much work. Like, I just want him to buy me a house and just forget like we ever got married, right? So I said this on a show, and the guy I asked the question for, he was confused. Like, he had like, what do you what like he thought this was a serious question. And then the other guest, she's like, Sharifa, he runs a travel agent and you're trying to find a man. I'm like, what? I need a man. So Lisa, I'm gonna mute you there. Lisa, can I find a man? Like, can you do a story on me? Like, our show host, single, divorced twice. Like, can you help us with that?
Here's the thing, because even when I do
That's a
seminars
no.
for
That's a
women,
no.
one of the most important things that I like to talk about is self-reflection and accountability. And I think that, it's not impossible for a woman to find a man. I mean, we're women. It's not, I don't think it's impossible. I guess the challenge comes in with, finding the right man and finding the man that, not only works for us, but we work for him as well, So it's mutually beneficial. So,
That was your nice, politically correct way of saying no, that I can't be in your magazine.
I
Well, you
mean,
won't help me, Lisa. I'm helping you. Like, we could work together.
we definitely can. We definitely can. What we could do is, we could get a story written. We could get you in the magazine. We can, definitely get you what you're looking for. We
That's
gonna put it
right.
out there, but we gonna
That's right.
definitely, ask you the tough questions. So, like I said, when the person who's looking for you, he's good too.
So, Lisa Kay, I love your magazine.
Definitely beneficial.
I love your magazine because I am a single woman and I'm over 60. So,
Nice.
that is a particularly interesting niche for dating. Especially if you're
It
like me, I'm very active and very fit and healthy, and trying to find a man my age who
is.
actually fits in that and who's also spiritual and open-minded and living in Texas is like.
Oh. Ooh,
That's a
that's a
lot.
wild
That's a
one.
lot, but Lisa gonna help you. Lisa gonna help you. You
Yes,
remind me.
absolutely. Absolutely.
One of my friends, she, and I love her to death. She's so hilarious. She's 98 years old. And so I go visit her time to time, help her out during the coronavirus. And she's like, she has a sweet little voice. She's like, Sharifa, have you found me a husband yet? I'm looking for a husband, but he got to be at least 125. And I always ask her, I'm like, where am I supposed to find a 125-year-old man? She's like, I don't know. And then I come back a little while later, she's like, Sharifa, have you found me a husband? I'm like, I don't know where to look. But I'm gonna tell her today. I'm gonna call her. I'm gonna say, I asked Lisa. Lisa, can you help us out? Like, she need a 125-year-old man.
Oh boy.
Lisa's quickly becoming a matchmaker.
Here's the thing, right? So
There's that politician. She starts with, here's the thing.
here's the thing. We have a number of readers, and they're both men and women. So what we could do is we can get you guys, into an article, ask you guys the tough questions, because we like to put guys on the spot too. So it's like sometimes we got to put the women on the spot and, give them the spotlight and say, what are your deal breakers? What are your do's and don'ts? Like, what are you, what makes you you? What is something that you feel is good about you that should attract someone else?
What's
So
the
like,
hardest question you ask?
I'm sorry.
What's the hardest question you ask? When you're asking the tough questions, what's the toughest?
For women or for men?
Both.
I think overall, I'm going to say this is the hardest question. And it's really interesting because it's an easy question. But when you ask someone, well, what are you looking for in a relationship? You know, it's such an easy question, but 90% of the time, the answers are fictitious because, you know, they give you an answer that I think they believe is socially correct, mm-hmm. not necessarily what they want, because when that does happen for them, or that does, you know, approach them, that want that they claim that they're looking for, they don't respond to it. And so, you know, when they don't respond to it, then it puts the other person in defense mode, because then the other person is thinking, well, you said you want someone that, you know, is spiritual. You say you want someone that's loyal. You say you want someone that's thoughtful. I'm giving all of this to you, and yet you're not responding to me. So what is missing? You know, and then
yeah, that's a really awesome point, Lisa, because yeah. I work with a lot of clients and I see that the women that marry, because I work with couples a lot, and I see women that marry guys who are exactly that, right? They're all that, they think that's what they want, and then they get into marriage and the sex goes away.
Yeah. Mm.
And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that as women, we really do want men who lead. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they have to be bossy or controlling, but right. we want them to lead. We want them to be decisive. We want them to be protective. We want them to be our shield. But that's often very confusing for women because they don't understand that they need that. And so they go for that thing that they think they want and find out, oh, wait. But men can learn to step up and do that too, right? It's not impossible for them to learn how to do that. So.
Yes. So, do you think that's generational at all, or do you think that's just generally true?
That's like generally true, whatever age, whatever generation, that's
true. Yeah, I think it's general as well.
Yeah, because I noticed that with myself, you know, being a man. Hey guys, I'm a man. so I've actually
thanks for letting us know.
I'm like fairly kind of emotional. You know, I've been a musician for like 15 years, fairly emotional. And I'm also like feminine, and I don't hide it. You know, I just embrace myself because I'm an emotional person, but I learned how to harness my emotions and do it properly so that I'm not like, you know, like over everything. So I noticed that my girlfriend, Andrea, she's the hostess of a retreat. Those are some of the things from her retreat, but she, you know, embraces that, loves that. And then also like, there's no loss of connection throughout the length of our, you know, relationship. We've been together for like a year and like a half now. And so we're just, you know, growing and adapting. And I know that I didn't expect to have a partner who would call me out on any time I was messing up. So it was really good because she would point out like, okay, you say that you want to progress. And then I'd be like emotional, like hearing what she's saying, but I'd be adapting it at the exact same time, which is really weird. And I've noticed that it's a psychological, like it's really strange psychologically that I can hear something, it affect me on a visceral level emotionally, and then I'm also putting it into action at the same time. That's but right. I noticed that because that I'm able to learn quickly, I'm able to act quickly, and I'm able to rise to the occasions, it's made it so that our relationship strengthens over time rather than weakens over time. And there's no loss of physical connection, if you get what I'm saying.
Look at that smile. Yes, that's what you were saying, Daryl. No, but I love you guys. You guys are so wonderful. When the first time I met Daryl, his girlfriend, Andrea, and that's that cute little picture of them in the background. They are so adorable. But I had Andrea Dela Cruz on my show. She were a guest and we were doing the show, and I looked at the comments later and there was this guy, Gerald Hulse, and he had made like all these comments. He was like, I love you, you're the best, and you're just so amazing, like the whole show. And then it's like, I don't know, he sent me a friend request or I sent him a friend request, and since then we have been friends, and that's how I initially met Daryl. But it stood out to me. What stood out to me is that he was not afraid to express his love. And to this day, he's always posting pictures. I love you. Like, that's his favorite word. And I think it's wonderful. But I wanted to go back and introduce our next guest, because we got to talking. We started the conversation. And I didn't introduce our guest, Melody Brooke, who has given her information based on being a licensed marriage family therapist and a counselor. So you're familiar with this. You're familiar with the dating and the family therapy. So let me just ask you this. One of the things that we've been saying since the start of the show, and people kind of believe, is that after, and we don't know when that will be, but after all of this COVID-19, there will be plenty of divorces and plenty of babies. So what have you seen as far as families and what they're going through during this time frame?
Well, what I've seen, and I do see clients on a regular basis, and a lot of them are couples, and I see that couples who have problems, their issues get expounded over this shutdown because they're on top of each other 24/7. And so the issues that were there before become bigger because they have more opportunities to clash. So, you know, helping them to work through that is a challenge, because the couples that are able to sort of reframe what's happening, they have the time now to really address it. So there's either they just, just say, okay, we're done, and they go off in their separate corners of their house, or they choose to address it. Or they're couples who already had a lot of good stuff happening, and this is an opportunity to increase the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's no more hiding.
That makes sense.
Yes, we definitely like to increase the good stuff. I had a friend, and I've been talking about her for the last few months, where I've been trying to, she's calling me, she's like, I want a divorce. I'm like, this is probably not the good time for that. You know, we don't know what's gonna happen. You may have to go live in the woods. You might need somebody to cut down the trees, make a firewood, build a tent, unload all the stuff. I'm like, you can't wait until COVID. She's like, no. And so I talked her out of it. They worked it out. 2-3 weeks later, she shows up like, I'm getting a divorce. I'm like, we just discussed this. So then she was adamant, I'm not going back. Last week, she's back at home. So I'm like.
and it sounds like she probably needs some help with learning how to regulate how to regulate their emotions a little more so that they can actually communicate, because that's where the real problem lies, is that people don't understand how to do that. They don't know how to settle themselves. They don't know how to go to that mindful place and settle down their old brain reactions so that they can respond to each other more compassionately.
Yes, that's true. But at the same time, once you keep saying those words, in my experience, that's not a good sign.
No, it is not. That's correct.
I definitely agree. But one of the things that's interesting, at least about them, is they've been married for 10 years. And they were not that couple that was the on again, off again couple. They were good. They were in love. They were happy. About a year ago, she got laid off from her job when the company closed. So she's been at home. And then about 2 weeks ago, he got laid off because he was working at a hotel. The hotel basically was like, we can't keep you. So he got laid off more as a result of COVID-19. So they're both at home, and it's driving them both crazy, which in turn, driving me crazy. So
that's the important thing.
Having more time together when they're used to a certain level of connection, a certain level of intimacy, a certain level of connection, disconnection, social time versus us time versus me time. And now with the current situation, it's really hard to get that balance. And I think that can create a lot of friction between couples.
So what I think is interesting, and I always say this, is that, and I tell people, and you guys can vouch for that, I don't pick the dates that the guests appear. The guests decide what day is best for them, what day works for them, but I always see commonalities, right? So we have Daryl, who is the quintessential guy in love. That's what he represents, wonderful relationship in love. We got Lisa over here trying to save us all, writing this magazine so that we can look at ourselves and fix what's broken in us or what's wrong, or ask the hard questions so that we can find happiness. We have Melody, who says, you know what, maybe we don't know what that is, so let's sit down and talk about it. And then our next guest, Catherine Miller, if we can't talk about it, we call Catherine. Catherine is a mediator and an attorney. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm great, Sharifa. Thanks for having me. It's been so much fun so far.
We like to have this conversation, but Do you work with divorces or people who are, what type of attorney are you? Let me just start there.
Yeah, that's what I do. I work with people in family relationships. So we do prenups. So Daryl, when you're getting ready to pop the question, you might want to consider that.
Need an airtight prenup, like,
yeah,
get out of there. No leakage.
Yeah, a tight prenup is always a good idea. And there are reasons why that is supportive of the marriage. And we could certainly talk about that. I think that a lot of times people think that prenups are like really somehow, right, putting the, like planning for the end before you even started, and really cynical. But in fact, I think they're really important conversations. We'll come back to that. And we also, I always say that I'm on a mission to change how people divorce and help them divorce with dignity, because I think that it is really, really hard once you kind of get stuck in the conflict dynamic that doesn't work well, like your friend, Sharifa, like, you know, they keep having the same fight, which ends up with her at your doorstep going, I'm getting divorced, right?
Yes.
And right, it's the same thing. It's the same fight over and over and over again about, you know, about different things, but that's really the details. The fight is about, I think, as Melody is pointing out, like the communication styles are not working. They're not able to express love and express appreciation and express connection in the way they have. When that breaks down, they fight about everything, but every fight feels the same way. And so I think that when people find themselves in that place, they really yearn for dignity. And again, once it's too late, I completely agree that people like Melody should see, you should go to someone like that before you come to someone like me. But yeah, lots of times, and Melody, I don't know if this is your experience, but a lot of my colleagues who work in family therapy and in coaching couples really say that people come to them when it's too late already, that the die has been cast, the marriage is over, and they're really just finding a way to kind of clean it up at the end.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of time that they say on average is 4 years too late when people show up. And yet, at the same time, you know, if there really is an undercurrent of love and respect for each other, which is a rare thing, but if that's there, even when they get that far, they can repair it. I've had it happen where people have come in with already having seen an attorney, already in that process, and then they come in and see me and they start to change how they interact with each other and with themselves so that they can respond more emotionally regulated to things that are happening, and they can begin to mend those problems.
I completely agree with that. I think love and respect,
yes,
because that respect, I think, is the harder thing. I mean, you might think that it's the love, but finding that the respect is still there, right? And they still really respect each other, then there's hope.
Right. And if the respect compassion is gone, it's, yeah, and compassion. Well, that's how you get to compassion, is through a combination of taking ownership and having respect and empathy for each other. That's what compassion is.
Yeah. Realizing, like, okay, I did something to make this happen. And also, I did something to make the communication not make sense. Like, let me figure out if I can either reword this or understand where the other person's coming from so I can better communicate.
Yes.
Right. My girlfriend, Andrea Cruz, she was working as a marriage and family therapist, and she's getting her MFT license right now. So I know totally, like, it's such a beneficial thing when you start to be able to identify what's happening and then respond to it appropriately.
Yeah, I think that's really hard. And I think that people get stuck in what I call the conflict trap. And, you know, I have a couple of conversations with my husband where he says something, I say something, he says something, and then I know a couple of things. One, I know I'm right, right? I'm really sure that I'm right, right? Do you guys know what it feels like to really know you're right? And I also know that if I say the thing that's in the front of my mind, on the tip of my tongue to say that I really want to say, because I am right, right? I am so freaking right. But I also know that if I say that thing, I can literally script out exactly what he's going to say and exactly what I'm going to say for 20 minutes. And I also know that we're both going to walk away from that conversation frustrated and unhappy. And so I have a choice in that moment, as we all do, to say something different, not about how right I am or how wrong he is or about the subject matter, but to change the conversation. And I don't necessarily know what's going to happen at the end of that conversation, but I do know it'll be different than the way it will be for sure if I say the thing that I want to say, because I'm so right. And that in that moment, that's so hard to do. But as you practice it and see that it actually works, it is really an opportunity.
I teach I teach my clients to take a time out, or just to own, hey, I'm having some feelings. So let me take a few moments to settle so I can understand what's happening. So when I come back to you, I can talk to you about it from my new brain, from my rational part of my brain, rather than my old reactive primitive brain. Yep. And then to be able to take ownership of their own feelings as they talk about it, rather than saying, you did this, you did that. Instead, just to own, hey, I had these feelings and this is why, when this happened, this is how I felt and this is why. So that it becomes a discussion about my feelings and not about your behavior.
Absolutely. Exactly. And I agree with that. One of the things that I do recommend also is just journaling. You know, sometimes when we get really, really angry and we just spew the first thing that comes to mind, that is also a problem. And I've had to actually learn that as well, you know, just to how to better refocus my anger. So if I'm feeling really angry, I'll take out my phone, my iPhone, I'll go to my notes and I'll like type everything like that I'm really frustrated about. And then, you know, as I calm down within that paragraph or within those few sentences of my anger, I find what I'm really mad about. And then those are the few words that I communicate to my partner. And men are so simple, you know, they don't want to read a paragraph or six sentences. They want to read like four words where you're explaining exactly what your problem is so they can fix it. Yeah. And, you know, that works tremendously well. And I think that that's why it's also important, you know, to go to therapy, whether individually or whether as a couple, because you can learn so much and you can, and they also give you homework, you know, and sometimes the assignment is write it down, you know, write it down before you speak.
And the argument is never about what you think it's about. It's exactly. Always about something else. You're actually fighting about has nothing to do with what's really going on.
Exactly.
Well, Einstein said, and I'm butchering this quote, something like you can never solve a problem at the level at which it presents. So that means never. Whenever you're arguing about anything, whenever a problem is presented, there's always something beneath it. And that's something that I really think about a lot in my work, when people are saying, okay, let's, you know, I want the green towels, you know, like, seriously, like, is that what it's about? No, it's about control or something like that. Like, it's something much bigger than that. So I think that's really
I call it arguing over the toothpaste. That's my phrase for it, you know, because it's like someone goes into the bathroom like, oh my God, the toothpaste cap is off and we need a divorce. And it's like, okay, you know, it's not about the toothpaste or the cap, but it's like, it's the everything else, these underlying microaggressions, all these frustrations, things you haven't mentioned, things you haven't discussed. It's never, ever, ever about the toothpaste cap. But I also see that a lot of times it's either our form of communication or one or the other not understanding our love languages. Those are the two things that I've seen that are so important. And I can see this, you know, I've been divorced twice, like I said, and I was, my family's from New York. And if anyone is in New York or knows anyone from New York, we're not the quietest people. You know what I mean? So we argue, we yell, you know, just because we're yelling doesn't mean we're mad, you know? Exactly. And then you have other people who are like, you're raising your voice. And I'm like, that's how I talk, you know?
We're passionate people. We're passionate.
Yes, you know, it's our communication. If you ever been to New York, like people yell from balcony to balcony, like we just do. You go in and you hear all of these raised voices. And you're like, that must be an argument. It's like, no, that's Sunday dinner. Like, that's just what we do, you know? So I have to say this. I'm going to say, hi, Forrest.
Hey, how's it going?
You just been so quiet. I've been waiting for you to jump in.
No, I know. There's a lot of good relationship experts on the call. I'm not one of them, so I'll let
But you are. Like, I'm sitting back and watching. I know. I see things, but you are a relationship expert. But your focus is not on love and those type of relationships. You focus on diversity and equity, and you're the co-founder and CEO of Uncrowd.io. So talk to us about diversity and equity.
Yeah, so the obviously very popular topic in the world right now, but particularly in my little niche, venture capital, venture funding for startup founders, it's very, very homogenous. I joke that it's mostly straight white guys on the coast giving money to other straight white guys on the coast.
That's not a joke, of course.
Yeah.
And so what we do with uncrowd.io, so I should say less than 10% of all venture capital goes to women, people of color, and LGBT founders combined. And 70% of all venture capital is in just four regions. It's in Silicon Valley, New York, Boston, and LA. And so what we're trying to do is try to make venture capital more accessible. So I built uncrowd.io as a platform. On one side, we populate startup founders. It's free for them. If you're a woman, person of color, LGBT founder, come join the platform. And on the other side, I populate investors, and I allow investors to easily filter to find startups that they probably wouldn't have found otherwise in their current process.
You know what, Forrest? This is what I'm going to do. I usually end my show at 9 o'clock, but I'm going to end it today at 8:35 because I need to go to uncrowd.io before everyone else and add my little startup, ask Sharifa, so I can meet some of the people. But what you're discussing, well, first of all, when did you start your business?
Officially in September of last year, but it's a project I've been trying to unwrap for probably 3 or 4 years now. I got into venture capital for the first time. I was fundraising for a different startup, and I just learned how bizarre the process can be, and how kind of it's very much warm introduction based. It's network based. It's who you know. And a lot of times that's country club networking. And if you're not a part of that, if you're out of it, you're out of it. Mm-hmm.
No, that's wonderful, because I'm going to go there, because the reason I asked when you started your business is because it's so timely, you know, yeah. And I love watching the shows. And I had one lady who was on my show, and she released a book that she'd been planning for over a year in March about the benefits of working remotely. And all of a sudden, you know, everyone's working remotely. Her book just took off, but it was because of the times that we're living in. Yesterday or over the weekend, I was reading an article. A lot of companies who have been saying that they're giving these grants to business owners are coming under fire because they are giving like a very small percentage to minority owned businesses. The ones that you mentioned, those are not the people who are giving the grants. I'll give you an example, Hello Alice. I don't know if you all are familiar with Hello Alice, but if you go to helloalice.com, for the last 4 months, they've been focusing on giving out these business grants, but you know, over the last couple of weeks, people have shown that only a small percentage have been minorities who have received them. The same thing with the SBA. Everybody's talking about the SBA loan/grant. Only a small percentage have gone to minority-owned businesses. So that is very timely.
Even the banks. Mm-hmm. So, I'm on that receiving end because I've experienced it firsthand. So, you know, it is heartbreaking to not only hear it, but experience it. So, but, you know, one of the things that, you know, as a business owner that I have to do is I have to just keep on going. You know, mm-hmm. I still have staff that I have to pay. I still have staff that I have to look out for. So I have to do what I have to do to make sure that my business stays afloat. But it's really, it's not something that is fictitious, what you're saying, and even what Forrest is saying. And it's sad, but it is the truth.
Yeah, it's systemic. It's a long time. This is a lot of institutional stuff that's been built up, and a lot of things that have been in place that some intentional, some unintentional. I mean, we talk about unconscious bias a lot, about things that are just kind of not people, lack of even awareness of what might be happening and why it might be happening. But either way, it's there and it needs to be dismantled. It needs to be improved.
So what, Forrest, exactly what are you doing that's helping to get people interested and focused on more diverse investments?
Yeah, so for me, it's a really easy sell because nobody loses. Everybody gets money. And so when you talk about kind of a disparity, so to take, and let's even take it to a smaller level. Right now, Black women get 0.0006% of venture capital. And so you don't need to have a background in tech to know that is, you're missing some people. You're just inherently missing some people. If you were to take the next transformative product, say like your Uber or your Facebook, were to come from a Black woman from middle America, it would not find an investor. And that's not just a loss for that founder. That's also a loss for investors. Investors want to make money. That's all that's what their goal is to make money. And so if we can get better ways to connect investors to help them find these founders that are being overlooked right now, everyone makes money. founders make money, investors make money, founders eventually become investors themselves, which brings more equity into whatever demographic they support. And ultimately it creates generational wealth, which is something we've been missing.
So talk to us about the platform. Is it a crowdfunding site? Do you create a profile? What specifically happens once you get there? Because, you know, even with the percentage that you gave, a lot of minority business owners get frustrated, you know, because we do these long drawn out applications, we go through this process, and then we don't get the grants. So we get tired of going through this process. And, you know, it's a certain aspect, we go, you know what, I'm not even going to try. I'm not even going to waste my time.
Yeah. So first off, let me say it's free for founders forever. We're very founder supportive. As far as effort, it's probably about the same as completing a LinkedIn profile. You go in, if you're a founder, and you just fill in a bunch of stuff about your business, and then that page exists. And then on the other side of the platform is where the investors come in, and the investors, it's really a tool for investors to help make their lives easier to find founders they've been missing. And so an investor can go in there and they can filter by whatever their investment thesis is. So if they like investing in, you know, business to business software startups that are in the Midwest that have 200K revenue, they can filter by all those things and then very quickly see a whole list of startup founders that we're not gonna land on their radar otherwise. So no cost to join for anybody. Right now it's just free.
No, I love that. I love that. So this is what I need to know from you, Forrest. Okay. What is the number one business in the number one city for the number one product that the investors are looking for? So I can go be that.
It's a good question. I would say, so if you're looking for your best chance at getting capital, I mean, the capital is still moving in San Francisco. A lot of other places it's dried up to an extent, but California, San Francisco stuff's still happening. That's not necessarily unique to California. There's a lot of places, but in general, that's where the capital is. If you're looking for ideas that investors are caring about, I think I've heard from a number of investors that they're scaling back kind of their bigger swings. So some of the moonshot products are probably taking a step back since COVID-19, but certainly things that are a little more tangible or certainly reactions to COVID-19. So a lot of moving things into the digital space, things that would have been in person previously, a lot of excitement about that.
Okay. So when you're ready, we're going to get together so you can write my profile. Sure. Yeah, that's how I get the best chance of being successful. And Forrest does it for me. So I'm going to come back to you, Forrest, but I'm going to go back over to Catherine real quick. So I'm going to work with Forrest, Catherine. We're going to go ahead and get some funding and investment in my business. But I got to make sure that nobody comes and tries to marry me and do an Anna Nicole and take all my money. So what do I need to know, Catherine?
Well, I think you really need to have those conversations before you just walk down the aisle. And you've at least been through the process of divorce a couple of times, Sharifa. So you, in particular, have some idea of what it means to legally be married, but most people don't. Most people walk into a marriage and don't really understand what it means to share property. They don't understand what happens to their earnings during their marriage, to their property. And there's a lot of stuff to think about. And the one thing that is really true is that all marriages end either by death or divorce. And so if you think about that, like, all right, it's not whether or not my marriage is going to end. It's how we're going to treat each other when it does end, and thinking through those two different things, because frankly, the laws relating to divorce are one set of laws and the laws relating to death are an entirely separate, completely different set of laws. It's like, look at the facts through one set of glasses or through the other set of glasses, and really to understand what the choices are and what happens when you get married and the relationship that you have and the responsibilities that you have to each other, and then to, you know, children if you have them in the relationship. All of that is very, very complicated, which was why divorce can be so horrible, because you're unwinding all these different things that are related, and people are getting information about what marriage meant when they're getting divorced. And I think it's really important for people to talk about that before they get married, and also to talk about, and Melody can probably talk about the importance of this. I think that people talk about what color napkins and the flowers and the caterer and the dress, certainly the dress, more than they do what their relationship to money is going to be during the marriage. You know, for one thing, people have different money styles. You know, mm-hmm. we've talked about your love language, but people have different money languages and different priorities.
Yeah, money, of course, is one of those major, major aspects that tend to cause divorce and cause friction between couples because they don't have those discussions before they get married. And it's funny too, how many people don't have the discussion about how many, you know, are they going to have kids or not before they get married? What? You know, those are kinds of important questions that people have to address, and that they're not addressing them is kind of disturbing, which I'm really glad they come into therapy with me at least and talk about it before they get married.
Yeah, because otherwise they come to me, which is, you know, fine for me, but not so good for them. And you know, and here's the thing. I think that maybe people who are together and planning to get married shouldn't get married. But most people, I think if they have an understanding, and this kind of goes back to compassion, Daryl, and, you know, and a sense of generosity toward the other person, understand where that other person is coming from before you're pissed. Because from that place of being angry, it's really hard. And I think when Melanie talks about old brain versus new brain, angry spot, it's really hard to find compassion.
Yes, it is.
Well, whenever I find myself in a heated emotional state, I stop it because I've practiced emotional, you know, practice harnessing my own emotions. I've done 12 years of meditation for at least like 4 hours a day on average. So,
yeah, but for people who are listening here, you don't need 12 years like, of meditation practice to do something different.
All you really need to do is take a time out.
In the realistic way of like looking at it, I understand that I can be wrong no matter what. No matter how experienced I am or how long I've done something, if she's talking about a subject and I might be like an expert in it, I still consider I can be wrong. I gotta listen to what she's saying because no matter how I feel about it, there's something I could learn in it if I'm open to it. If I'm not open to it, I'm not going to have the opportunity to learn and grow. And that's all I care about is growing. I don't care about anything but growth.
That's so, taking ownership. So and that taking ownership is key to really making anything be different in your life. If you can't take ownership of your part of things, there's no way anything in your life is ever going to change. You're going to remain a victim and stuck.
Yeah. Melody, one of the things that you mentioned taking a time out. One of the things that I've seen different relationships and different people is sometimes you have the person who says, you know what, I can't talk about this right now. I need some space. I need some air. I need to walk away. And then you may have the other person that says, no, we're going to talk about this right now. We have to talk about this right now. You can't just walk away. And then sometimes things tend to escalate because you have two different people who expect, want, need, demand, two completely different things.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person who, when I'm mad, because I very rarely get mad, but when I'm mad, leave me alone. Do not, because if you want me to talk at that point, you will get your feelings hurt just because you won't let me calm down.
It's really important to respect each other enough to listen to what the other person is asking for. And if someone is asking for a timeout, they need to take a timeout, regardless of how frustrating that can feel. But one of the ways to address that is to say, I need a timeout. I will come back to this. I just need to calm myself down. And when you can do that, that's respectful, right? If you can listen to each other. But it's also a good idea to have those conversations before you're in that heat of the moment, so that in the heat of the moment, you can recognize, okay, I made an agreement that I would take a timeout when my partner's overwhelmed.
It was something else that Lisa said earlier about kind of being true to what you want and staying true to that. I was having a discussion the other day with one of my closest people, and they're online dating and they meet a person. They're going out, they're having a good time. On his profile, it says, I am not looking for a serious relationship. I just want to date. But now he wants to see her every day, all day. And then she's like, okay, wait a minute. Like, we've been seeing each other every day and you said you didn't want a serious relationship. So it's like sometimes we put out there what we ask for, what we say we want, like Lisa was saying, is not actually what we want or what we expect. And so there can be some confusion.
Well, our hearts are not simple, right? We think we know what we want. We have this idea in our head. Like I certainly had my idea in my head about what I wanted in terms of a marriage partner. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of a list of those things that I was looking for. And yet that's not what I married at all. Because we have emotional reactions that are entirely different from our rational mind. Mm-hmm. And we tend to be run by, especially in romantic relationships, our emotions rather than our rational mind. And learning how to do as Daryl was talking about, being able to take that mindfulness and slow ourselves down and really listen to our higher self will allow us to make a different kind of choice and not be run by those old brain reactions.
Mm, I think that's interesting. We also have old brain reactions in terms of investing. So I want to come back to you, Forrest. What was the response when you came out with this? I mean, because you make it sound so simple, which basically what you said was your joke that white men invest with white men. I mean, maybe they don't want to change that. Maybe they don't want to look out the box. Maybe they feel like, how did you get them to say, okay, invest in these companies?
Yeah, the short answer is I haven't yet. I'm trying. The feedback from a lot of investors is what we call the pipeline problem. And investors say, you know what, I'm founder agnostic. All I want to do is make money. I don't care what they look like. I don't care where they come from. It's all I want to do. But, and they say, my pipeline is mostly just white guys. That's who's coming through. And so what I'm trying to get them to understand is that it's much more of where you're looking. It's your process. Your process isn't wide enough. You aren't casting a wide enough net. You're not being intentional about that. And so what you're doing is you're taking the easy path, which is who's already in your network. And your network tends to be mostly other white guys. And so that's how, and so what I'm trying to do is kind of kill the pipeline problem narrative. And it's going to take more than a few success stories before investors start realizing that it's a smart move. Statistically, it is a smart move. Statistically already, if you're a venture capitalist, you're in an industry of big swings. Your goal is to find something that's going to have a big return, and you know that you're going to have a lot of failures along the way. So it's strange to me that it hasn't, that diversity investing hasn't been a bigger piece of that, because it's, to me, the most obvious niche to move into if you want to take a big swing and find someone that other investors are not finding right now.
Do you think the pipeline considered... problem is really the problem? The way we've been talking about, like we're saying, people say they want one thing, but really want another thing. I mean, is it that they say it's a pipeline problem, they think it's a pipeline problem, but really it's institutional racism and sexism and all those, you know, many other problems that could be coming up?
That's my belief. That's what I believe. I'm certainly not them. I'm not going to try to figure out exactly what they think, but that's my belief. My belief is that they have found a system that feels comfortable for them, and it's with people that they're comfortable talking to and people they're comfortable giving money to. And so that kind of perpetuates itself, and that money stays within a certain circle and it doesn't venture out of there.
Have you considered possibly taking these venture capitalists and stuff and integrating the people of color, the women and the people that they normally wouldn't have any exposure to, and putting together networking events so that it would make it so that there'd be less resistance as far as doing all that. And then on top of that, doing like summits and doing events put everybody in the same environment.
Yeah.
Because it's really proximity to power. It's like, however close you are to the power, the more likely it's going to be that you you participate in it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of activity in that space already. So there's a lot of events, there's incubators, there's accelerators, there are funds that only invest in women, there's funds that invest in women of color, all these things kind of exist. What's tricky is that there just isn't enough capital in that domain already. So what I'm trying to do is really my goal with Uncrowd is to consolidate all of that. So that there's kind of these siloed pieces. A lot of times it's geographic too. So it'll be like, hey, we're investing in Philadelphia. And so bring all of those to one platform so that if you are an investor, your job just becomes a lot easier, especially, and I'm going to say like a very friendly investor, an investor who's actively saying, hey, I want to invest in this space. I want to do this. Right now, it's a lot of work to track down everyone that you could be investing in. That's part of why warm introductions are so valuable, is because it's hard to know if it's worth your time to go find someone in Miami. Is that compared to someone who your friend recommended to you? And so what we're trying to do is consolidate so that that process itself just becomes a lot easier, and that you're quickly able to see all of the women who are trying to get money right now, and all of the people of color, and all of the LGBT founders, put that in one place so that investors don't have to look in a lot of spots.
One of the things I've seen, and I work in the film industry also, is that, you know, I see there's this whole block of Asian films, there's this whole block of white films, there's this whole block of Black films, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of diversity within each community. And I understand the reason for each of those, you know, Asian films and the Black films going in the direction that they do, because they haven't had opportunity in the much larger white film world. It's been pretty exclusive. So now we have these three, you know, these different blocks of filmmakers who are not working together and sharing their talents and sharing their diverse views and trying to work together toward a more diverse society as a whole. And one of the things that I've done is I started a United We Stand in Film Facebook page to try to bring people together who are working on creating these more diverse environments. And I know that one of the reasons for the difficulty is that exactly what you say, that the investors go to where the areas they're familiar with, which is largely, you know, the white films get funded, and it's hard. And if the Asians or the Black communities will put their funds together, they can help fund each other. You know, I get why they do that. I just want to see, as you say, a more diverse world where we start to work together. And one of the things I'm wanting to do is start a film festival, United We Stand in Film Festival, where we have diverse crews, diverse casts, diverse storylines, so that we can start to have a different kind of film community.
I love that, Melody. I'm going to go to your page. I'm writing it down right now, United We Stand, and check it out. Forrest, I was curious a little bit about the name, the Uncrowd. So if I'm assuming, I would go like, these people are the in crowd. These are the people who get everything. And these are the people who are not a part of the in crowd. And I can't think of the name right now, but it's like one of the largest funding websites. If you're looking for funding, you go, you sign up, and you create your profile. And then what you do is you contact people or you reach out to the investors. But the only way that you can reach them is somebody has to introduce you from their network. And I always ran into a problem because I didn't know any of these investors. I got lucky one time, and I found out that a classmate of mine was actually a friend because of one of the investors. And I reached out to my friend, and he was a white guy. He had all these like, okay, well, I might introduce you, but I have to be absolutely sure, you know, and I really have to have a guarantee, that kind of thing. And so I was like, you know what? It's not even worth it. So Uncrowd versus in crowd.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we like the name because we're the Uncrowd. We're working with underrepresented founders. And it's exactly right. So this allows one of the pieces of feedback we got, which I really appreciate, is from an investor. He's a Black man, and he's wealthy, but not from within tech. He's unfamiliar in the investing space. He was corporate, and he wanted to do venture capital and just didn't know how to start. So what ends up happening is they join what's called an angel group. And it's a group of other angel investors who collectively come together, and someone else kind of sources deals for them and makes their lives easier. And he was seeing the same thing. He's like, hey, I'm not seeing people that look like me coming through this. And our platform allowed him to source his own deals. Then he could go and he could say, this is what I'm looking for. This is who I want to invest in. I didn't know how to find these people before. And so it's really built to just facilitate connection, facilitate a way to get more capital to the people in the hands of people that don't have it right now.
I love it. Now we are coming down to the last 2 minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests briefly to speak directly to the audience and to everyone who is watching live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archives, and really really let them know what you want them to take away from your interview. Are you still with us, Lisa?
Yeah, she had to go.
Okay, so Lisa had to go. Daryl, what do you have for us?
I know that this episode was primarily women, and women are the most vulnerable when it comes to getting robbed or assault or any type of situation where somebody's breaking in. And so just because I offer the service, I do ADT. So anybody who needs to get their home secured, you know, I actually help out with that and make sure that everyone's safe.
That is wonderful. And in what area do you install the ADT?
Anywhere in the US. So just reach out to me on Facebook or get a hold of me on Facebook, Daryl Hulse II, H-U-L-S-E.
That is wonderful. Catherine, what do you have for us?
I think that if anybody is out there having dealt with this pandemic and his relationship is really suffering, if they're married, that they, you know, divorce doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be Armageddon. You don't have to ruin your children and your finances, and that there are ways to resolve conflict and come apart in a conscious way and do it really intelligent and safely. And we're based in the New York area as lawyers, but our mediation services are nationwide. And I think that really considering what the options are rather than just blowing it out of the water makes a lot of sense. And we'd be happy to help anyone who has questions about that.
Yes, and I definitely recommend mediation. A lot of people do not utilize that as an option as much as I think just headed straight for the divorce. So I definitely recommend the mediation.
I think they just don't know.
Yes, absolutely. Right. That's why I appreciate that you mentioned it. Forrest, what do you have for us?
Yeah. If you know any startup founders, if you are a startup founder or you're an investor, come to uncrowd.io, sign up, join the platform. The platform only improves with the more people that are on it. If we have a million startups on there, it kind of becomes an undeniable source that investors need to go to look for their deals. So the product improves, the ecosystem improves.
Yes. I'm going to take a look. And if I like what I see, I put it out on my social media, and every Monday I send out my Roundtable Talk Show newsletter, and I'll go ahead and include it in the newsletter. So we'll get some people and help you help us. Melanie, you're welcome. What do you have for us?
I'm a marriage and family therapist and an individual counselor, and I have a website. It's called melodybrook.com. You can learn more about me, about my books, about my workshops, and about my membership programs there. I am licensed in Colorado and in Texas, but I can also, of course, see people as a coach outside of Colorado and Texas.
Wonderful. I want to thank all of you for being my guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to also thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching the show in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, and we are raising funds as well. That's why I launched the $50,000 production fundraiser so I can be able to promote and advertise and market so we have more people who watch the show and tune in to all of you. So definitely check out the fundraiser. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.